This is Get Lit with Literature, and this is Monk, part two of the Roger Jones book, Physics as Metaphor, and including another book because it segues oh so amazingly, which got me excited, which is the theme of this show, Get Lit with Literature. The other book is by Matthias Desmet, who's a clinical psychologist. It's called The Psychology of Totalitarianism. And I'm only 65 pages into it, but the segue is too good. And also the discussion about Jones's book with Stephen Newcomb is still on tap. So in Jones's book, he mentions a quote. I'll mention it again. Number is as fundamental as the other three cardinal metaphors, space, time, and matter, because it is an interrelated aspect of the divide and conquer metaphor, which extends and diversifies the primal unity. And there's more about that, but the chapter is called The Numbers Racket. So I get to a chapter in Desmet's book. It's called The Immeasurable Universe, with the I am in parentheses, so it's the immeasurable universe. Now, he came to the fore in public awareness that I know of with regard to the COVID crisis. And if you're like me and you were reading tons of articles over the past 2 or 3 years, there was a certain point where I noticed and I said to people, there was nothing conclusive. One study showed wearing a mask prevented the virus. Another study showed not wearing a mask did not increase the virus, or vice versa, whatever the case. Same thing with almost every single thing I read. Different countries, different stats, different procedures. There were maybe a few consistencies that, you know, the people that are most susceptible with pre-existing health conditions, and the very elderly, but very elderly healthy, would override that. And there was some other condition too that I forgot, but those were some of the main things. And so there were some consistencies, but yet nothing that I saw from tons of articles that was totally conclusive. And yet, and this is the point that Desmet makes, and yet the level of draconian measures, lockdowns, the top-down enforced rules coming from technocratic, political, big pharma scientists, people who were not like Bill Gates, who don't know anything about actual health, in a sense, and literally, they were mandating all these rules. So this is not in no way to diminish the sadnesses and the loss of lives, which were there's a big numbers there. And yet, in the big perspective, we need to look at what else unfolded. One of the things that, there's a lot of good quotes I'm already underlining a lot of this book, but one of the things that he expresses in this chapter is that the collateral damage, it was largely ignored, the collateral damage of the measures, despite them being a crucial factor. There have been hardly any publicly available data and statistics on the number of victims of delayed treatment, suicide, vaccination, food insecurity, and economic disruption. There's been a lot of, I've heard from a friend via the therapist, that there's been a huge amount of mental issues and emotional issues in adapting to and adjusting to the virus, and that is still affecting tons of people, but we do not see those statistics mentioned nowadays, hardly ever. It was all in the moment about the number of hospital beds available and this and that and the other thing. So the gist of it is that, I'll cut to the chase here, at the end of the chapter where Desmet says, but first in chapter 5 we consider the social conditions that prime a society to cling to this numerical illusion of certainty. we will see that the flight into false security is a logical consequence of the psychological inability to deal with uncertainty and risk. An ability that has been building up in society for decades, perhaps even centuries. So that's a deeper premise of the how totalitarian regimes can even take over a country. But I find that quite fascinating, the psychological inability to deal with uncertainty and risk. Now, I mentioned that to Mindy in my interview with her, the book by Alan Watts called The Wisdom of Insecurity. And so there's a certain level of statistics and numbers that gives people a sense of security, but it's based on it. It's not conclusive. I mean, I don't think I'll ever, after reading this chapter by Desmet, I will be skeptical of any study I ever read again about that's based on statistics and this percentage of that percentage. I mean, there may be some truth to it, but I will not be fully convinced until I look further into it. And he explains in this chapter how the sleight of hand statistics are done. It can be with certain information or facts that are relative to the study but are not included. One example he gives is of the measuring of a coastline in Great Britain, where if you measure the length of the coastline of Great Britain based on a unit of measurement 200 kilometers, it is 2,400 kilometers long. If you measure it with a unit of 50 kilometers, it is 3,400 kilometers long. As you decrease the unit of measurement, the length of the coastline of Great Britain increases to infinity. So it depends on... If I say, I have a study measuring the coastline, you'd have to know what measurement I used, not the number that I present about the coastline. A similar confusion was done with statistics relating capital punishment, the execution percentage with blacks and whites, and that various factors were included, whether it was a white-on-white crime, white-on-black, black-on-white, black on black. So all those factors made a difference in the statistics presented, and the statistics flipped depending on the use of the statistics. So here's Desmet. The coronavirus crisis offered an unexpected window of opportunity for the mechanistic ideology. The uncertainty and fear of the virus provided a basis for the information and development of a society in which decisions are made based on numbers rather than stories. And then with regard to the kilometers, he says, this is how the brilliant Polish-Jewish mathematician Benoit Mandelbrot showed that measurements are always relative, depending on a series of subjective choices, such as the unit of measurement. Numbers have a unique psychological effect that create an almost irresistible illusion of objectivity, which is further enhanced when numbers are presented visually in charts or graphs. When people see numbers, they believe them to be objects or facts. This illusion blinds people to the nonetheless obvious truth that numbers are always relative and ambiguous, that they are constructed and produced from an ideology and subjectively shaded story. At first glance, the numbers seem only true to the facts, yet on closer inspection, it becomes clear that they slavishly serve every story. So, and then he goes on to also show that the subjective premise that is presented is flavored by who is presenting the story. Numbers played a crucial role in this saga. In principle, the coronavirus was about calculating relatively simple phenomena such as the number of infections, hospitalizations, and deaths. However, it was plain as day that the data were anything but objective. The number of infections was usually determined by PCR tests, which didn't run smoothly. These tests are designed to determine whether RNA sequences from a virus are present in the body. Those RNA sequences can come from a virulent virus, but also from a, quote, dead, unquote, virus. As a result, people may, even months after an infection, and therefore long after they are contagious, still test positive. And this was just one of the many limitations of the test. Furthermore, the data around death counts, perhaps the most elementary variable among all the data, proved to be anything but ambiguous. About 95% of registered COVID-19 deaths showed one or more underlying conditions. 95% of registered COVID-19 deaths showed one or more underlying conditions. In addition, coronavirus victims were usually of advanced age, on average 83 years old in Belgium during the first wave, slightly older than the average life expectancy. It's a good question. How do you determine who dies from COVID-19? If someone who was old and in poor health gets the coronavirus and dies, did that person then die from the virus? Did the last drop in the bucket cause it to spill over more so than the first? There's a Zen koan for you. Did the last drop in the bucket cause it to spill over more than the first? And there was also, there was a large, in the native peoples, the Navajo, the Diné nations, a large issues with COVID. And that seems to tie in with this. Rather than indication of COVID-19's exceptional danger, the overload seems to be the result of two colliding trends over recent decades: a sharp rise in susceptibility to developing serious symptoms in viral lung diseases in a major part of the population, especially suffering from obesity and diabetes. That is something prevalent among native peoples due to the enforced change in their food, original foods, natural native grown foods. Sharp rise in susceptibility due to that, and number two, systematic reduction in ICU beds. Here's another study. For example, in 2020, thousands of elderly people in Dutch residential care settings died due to loneliness and neglect during the lockdowns. And a German study suggested that about half of the high mortality in ICUs during the first wave was due to mass intubation ventilation. It is difficult to say whether these numbers are entirely accurate, but we do know hospitals backpedaled on this protocol in mid-2020 due to its counterproductiveness. It is an important question we need to ask ourselves. What would the virus mortality graphs look like if they were adjusted for these factors? And again, another study that here, who has heard in the media about the Harvard University study that found no difference in the course of the pandemic between countries with high and low vaccination rates? And there's a footnote for that. What is certain, however, is that once more, the numbers can be easily adapted to opposing stories. Here's a part I highlighted. It is the unspoken tensions, fears, and disagreements on an ideological level that prevent the numbers from settling down and that make society polarize. The real questions to be asked are situated at the ideological level. For instance, do we view man as a biochemical machine that has to be technologically monitored and pharmaceutically adjusted, or as a being that finds its destination in mystical resonance with the other and with the eternal language of nature? Quite the question there. Do we view man as a biochemical machine that has to be technologically monitored and pharmaceutically adjusted, or as a being that finds its destination in mystical resonance with the other and with the eternal language of nature? Perhaps a combination, but of course, the technologically technocratic, you're looking at a human being with a soul as a machine and yada yada is dangerous. And here's another, this is again getting to how people can be swayed, and this is not just about the coronavirus, the almost irresistible illusion that numbers represent facts ensures that people become increasingly convinced that their own fiction is reality. The fanatical belief in the objectivity of measurements and numbers, which is typical of the mechanistic ideology, is not only unfounded, it is also dangerous. If you're convinced that your own subjective fiction is reality, you will also think your reality is superior to the fiction of others. This is how we become convinced that our fiction can be imposed on the other by any possible means. The dominant ideology repeatedly presents numbers in the mass media that confirm its own narrative, resulting in a largely fictitious reality in which a large part of the population firmly believes. The excessive use of numbers and statistics that show a radical contempt for the facts, the blurring of the line between fact and fiction, and a fanatical ideological belief that justifies deception and manipulation and ultimately transgresses all ethical boundaries. So in the chapter, Desmond does make a point to say he is aware of the possibilities of either side being accurate, and he's aware of the health issues and the sadnesses about that, but I think he is pointing to a very essential thing about how these numbers and statistics, and in conjunction with big corporations and ideologies, that the effect on society and on the people en masse and on the global consciousness makes this something that is worth looking at. So again, Jones, at the beginning of Jones's chapter on the numbers racket, number is as fundamental as the other three cardinal metaphors, space, time, and matter, because it is an inherent related aspect of the divide and conquer metaphor, which extends and diversifies the primal unity. So this is what's happened to some degree since the COVID virus. Friends, families, different groupings of societies in society that avoid each other or no longer see each other, that's happened. I have experienced that personally with family, with a respectable, people, each sector respecting the other's choices, but my choice not to get vaccinated or tested or whatever has affected, sometimes getting together with family. So it's not a matter of this is not looking to point at who's right or wrong, but just looking to point about how these numbers, to question the whole process that's happening and how accurate it is, because that numbers racket can be used to divide people, which it has already done on a large scale in society. People have lost jobs because they didn't want to get to do the vaccination and this and that. So the statistics of how those have affected people are hardly mentioned in the news. Whole COVID, the narrative, the dominant media narrative, because why would they hype that but then not pay extra attention and care to all the people still struggling and suffering because of lack of work, because of mental health issues and all that? Why is that not highlighted as much as what was highlighted? Because the typical big media dominant narrative is hype and then on to the next thing. So that makes me question how the numbers were used, which fits in with this. So again, leaping from Jones's book from 1982 to Desmond's book, 2022. So that's 40 years. Interesting. Very interesting. To me, it's one of the fascinations and why I love doing this, is because in the information in the books and connecting some dots, it provides, it's kind of like, one thing builds onto the next and feeds the other and helps the cause. So again, I'll quote Desmond, the uncertainty and fear of the virus provided a basis for the function and development of a society in which decisions are based on numbers rather than stories. Stories are some people call them myths or origin stories, or the histories, the narratives, the dominant things. Religions are based on stories, the power of stories. That's a whole another topic, but in contrast with numbers, a fascinating study. A fascinating topic. So thank you for listening and be well.